This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Judy, I'm so worried about you. I hear you had a stroller accident on the way into Roberta's today.
I got clipped by a stroller waiting for a coffee in the front of Roberta's by the sweet bun section. And, yeah, like, remember when we started coming here a couple years ago? There were no babies here. There were no old people. Now there's, like, people with baby Bjorns strapped to their fronts, clipping innocent bystanders who just want a coffee. Happy St. Patrick's Day to me, Judy McGuire.
And how you feeling today? Were you out doing the pub crawl with the rest of your tribe last night, Judy McGuire?
I actually did go to a bar in the East Village last night.
Really? Which,
yeah, I know.
Wow.
I know. We were the oldest people there by 1,000.
And how'd that work out for you? A bar in the East Village last night was bad. Up in my
Saturday.
Neighborhood, it was already a parade of, like, green plastic hats. And, I mean, I was just a few moments away from that multicolored river of puke that is
inevitable. We went there, and there's some guy wrapped in the Ukraine flag. He was another old person, and then he had to go home to his wife. He's like, I'd like to invite you ladies home with me, which we were seriously considering, except for my wife would be upset. Anyway, for St. Patrick's Day, we have our great drinking expert guest, Rosie Shapp. Thanks so much for coming.
Yay, thank you so much for having me again. It's
all
nice
right.
To be
right.
Here.
That's right. Famous tippler and scribbler for the New York Times. And, of course, your book, Drinking with Men, very popular here on Arts and Seizures.
Thank you. And it's true. I've sometimes been called a professional drinker, which is exactly what my mother expected I'd grow up to become.
God bless you.
Jesus, Mary and Johnson. I learned how to make an old-fashioned when I was, like, 5.
Was it your dad's drink or your mom's drink?
Both.
Both, okay.
Yeah, I learned to muddle.
Yeah.
it was fine Irish tradition. Had my first beer at my first Holy Communion.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good. They sort of just turned you into, like, a little cocktail-making helper monkey.
Yeah.
Judy Smart, just teach her how to muddle.
Exactly.
Well, you ran the pub crawl last night in my neighborhood. Just sort of somewhere between Gramercy and Murray Hill. I mean, it just gets uglier and uglier every year. And already there are these, like, big posters for the St. Patrick's Pub Crawl. I mean, it's advertised in advance. Even the non-Irish bars, the bars don't usually fly the flag. The rodeo bar, I mean, they had their colors out.
And
it just gets ugly fast. I don't know where these people come from.
Yeah, they come from all over the place, and I usually just forego St. Patrick's Day. But, you know, when it's on a Monday, it does stretch out across the whole weekend that precedes it. So I got out of Manhattan early yesterday. I was in Manhattan doing some work, got back out to South Slope where I live around 5 in the evening. And I got to say, I just went to my local bar, the bar where I happen to work every Tuesday.
South.
And I was going to have one pint of Guinness.
And what happened?
Famous last words.
Famous last words. As we say at South, I got soused. So I had 2 pints of Guinness and a little bit of whiskey.
Just a wee dram.
But there were fun people, and we were having a great conversation, and that's what I love about being in a bar.
That's what I love about being in a bar that's not in Williamsburg or the East Village. Because there are other adults there, and you don't feel like somebody's dirty parent.
Well, we've had this conversation before. I mean, it just gets harder and harder to find an adult bar for a civilized drink. And it sort of it goes from sports bars. My neighborhood, I don't like TVs in bars.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I get the concept of going to a bar and watching the game. I'm all for that.
Yeah.
That's fine.
That's what a sports bar is for.
Exactly. But the alternative, and not somewhere short of this new wave of cocktail bars, which I like, you know, an artisanal, well-made good cocktail by an educated mixologist. I get it. That's all well and fine.
Absolutely.
But between that element of hipster cocktailology and just a bar where adults can go and have a conversation without having to listen to U2 or Bruce Springsteen on the jukebox have become far and few between in New York City.
Well, you know, I think it's true that there are fewer of those kinds of great, regular, grown-up neighborhood bars, but I also have this theory that they're still around and people don't want to talk about them because they don't want to jinx them or make them go away. People have become kind of protective of their neighborhood, of their locals, you know, as these safe havens where you can be a grown-up and have a conversation and not watch a game and not listen to music you don't want to hear that's played too loud. So I find, you know, when I wander around the city, I find, oh, here's a little sleeper of a bar in the middle of nowhere, and it turns out to be delightful, and everybody's very quiet about it.
So tell us some. Okay, there's none in Williamsburg. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you right now, if you want a quiet drink in Williamsburg, you go to a restaurant.
No, restaurant bars can
also. Restaurant bars are awesome. And I think as we get older, also, when you have a couple extra dollars and you're not looking for a cheap pint of beer or happy hour specials, you definitely have more flexibility.
Absolutely.
Because we're old and we are.
I'm not uncomfortable with you saying that about me, Mike. That's fine.
Very nice. Mike alienating another guest.
No, I'm all right with it. It's better than
we just mean you're over 28. I think it's safe to say you're over 28.
It's definitely safe to say that. It has been safe for many years to say that. You know, I think we kind of have to seek these places out. Open to surprise, a place that might look really lackluster on the outside, might have a great old bartender who has great stories. I think it's a good time for trying a place that we know isn't one of these really upscale cocktail bars. And we know isn't just a dive for early 20-somethings. There are these places in between. Just take a chance and walk in and see what happens.
I'll pitch a bar. I'll tell you which bar in my neighborhood I like. I like the Black Duck Bar.
That's a very grown-up place.
You know,
yeah.
And hello to my friend Richard, who manages the joint.
Yeah.
It's really regular. It's he tends to play bebop and jazz at a very tolerable volume.
Great.
You know, there is a TV, but it's not the main attraction. It's in the corner. So if you need to take a peek and see if the revolution has started, you know, in Eastern Europe yet.
Which revolution? Yeah.
Or here in America, see if the riots have begun. The TV's on or who won the game. But it's not the thing.
Right. If the TV's not dominating, I mean, even at South, we have a TV, but the volume's never on. It's stuck in a corner. It's not a gigantic monster there.
This week, I was telling Rosie earlier, I went out to Donovan's in Woodside in my adopted new borough. And it's an old Irish bar. It supposedly has the best burger in the city. And it was delightful. And, you know, the men at that bar, I think I could have gotten lucky if I weren't already
Judy, what's
attached.
The address?
Kidding. It's right off the 7 train.
Right off the 7 train.
There
That's
are a
like
bunch
the story
of old Irish
Queens,
guys.
Right off the 7 train.
But it was very nice. I mean, the waitresses are not as nice as they are at Molly Shabin, my second favorite Irish bar.
Which is a great Irish bar.
Best daytime winter bar.
It's beautiful
ever.
And cozy, and they pour a great pint of Guinness. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of folklore attached to what makes a great Guinness great and a bad Guinness bad.
Tell us about it.
And you'll hear all kinds of things.
Yeah, much of it apocryphal.
Absolutely. You know, I've never gotten a conclusive answer of any kind about this. But, you know, people will say if there's really great turnover, it's a place that's pulling pints of Guinness all the time, if they keep their lines nice and clean. But that should be true of any beer you drink.
That's right.
And, of course, so much is in the pour. And, I mean, I always take pride in pouring a pint of Guinness. I take it seriously. It's a wonderful ceremony.
Well, you don't pour a pint. You build a pint.
Well, true. But I know that it's just not possible here. Maybe in an Irish bar in the farther reaches of Queens or the Bronx. Maybe. But for the most part, no one in New York is just going to wait as long as one expects to wait for a Guinness in Ireland. They're not going to give me, you know, I can take maybe 3 minutes, mm-hmm. but beyond that, people get very impatient.
Well, Guinness was brilliant. Back in the day when I was a beverage journalist, a business beverage, it's true, I was an editor for Beverage World magazine.
Was that before or after you were a stoner journalist?
Okay,
they go together,
listen,
fine.
I went from pornography to liquor to drugs.
There's nothing left for you to do in this
which
world,
is
Mike. You
basically
all.
No vice
the
untapped.
Same, the same career trajectory as like a head of steer in a slaughterhouse. I did do a story about Guinness.
Yeah.
And I talked to their CEO, their marketing people, and it was brilliant. This was in the mid-90s. They had effectively lowered the temperature from a marketing standpoint, even like just the image that, oh, Guinness was is warm.
Oh, and yeah, it's really yeah. No, you don't want warm Guinness.
And it's something for old men, but that's what a lot of yeah. young Americans had right, this idea right. that, you know, in Britain they drink their beer warm,
no,
you know,
no,
or
no,
not
no.
even like, you know, cask temperature or cellar temperature.
Right, right.
But they effectively lowered the temperature, and they were on an education trip, which was an amazing marketing thing. I mean, they like quadrupled their volume. I mean,
yeah.
they have a very small slice of the actual general market.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's like, you know, half of 1%, but that half of 1% represents $1 billion. And they like quadrupled it in a couple of years by partnering with bars,
yep.
by getting women who wanted to be, you know, to drink Guinness while the band was playing Van Morrison or U2 and all these friendly Irish things, because Irish bars were a place where old men went once upon a
right.
time. And now they're very chick-friendly and youth-friendly. And the people at Guinness really had that in mind. They said,
right.
if I can get you to try Guinness twice, you'll be a Guinness drinker.
Yeah, it's kind of like olives that way. You know, if your grandma said, oh, you need to have six of them or something, and then you'll like them. And you're like, why do I have to do that? But I do like olives, it turns out. It's true that I still don't see as many women drinking Guinness as I see men.
Because of the calories.
Another myth, though.
The calories, but it is pretty low in alcohol.
But it's not more fattening than regular beer, I understand.
I don't think so. I mean, do I pay attention to those
No,
things?
But I think these are the myths of Guinness. It's not that strong. It's not that fattening. It doesn't have blood in it.
Well,
all these weird things you used to hear about Guinness.
It's our St. Patrick's Day pizza.
Hooray!
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you.
That looks delicious.
That looks amazing. I don't know about the calories, because it's true. I really don't pay attention. And whenever, you know, I get a lot of pitches for some... Oh, this pizza looks great. Speaking of calories and not caring.
I'm letting myself go.
Perfect. It's well in progress here.
Yeah, I'm right there.
You know, whenever I get a pitch for a drink that starts with the word skinny,
ugh.
It's like instant delete. So this is not my field of expertise, the calorie content of different drinks. But I know that Guinness is not terribly strong. So for me... When I was on book tour last year, and it was fantastic, and everybody I saw in every city wanted to go out drinking, and I didn't want to let them down, but I couldn't get completely hammered every night. Guinness is my strategy, because the alcohol's not very high, and I can linger over a pint for a long time.
Yeah, it can take you a while to drink a Guinness.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this pizza's unbelievable.
Yeah. We're so hungry, I think we should take our break a little early.
It's like this, I think, episode number 121 or 122, Judy, and the pizza, man, it just does not get old.
Does it get better every week, the pizza?
Or it can.
Wow.
Sometimes it does.
Are there more napkins over there?
We'll get you some napkins. Why don't we take a quick break? Evan,
we're going to hear the Pogues.
Excellent.
Shane McGowan and...
Because it's Purim.
Because it's Purim, that old Jewish band, the Pogues, is
playing...
Well,
also a drinking holiday.
Sally McLellan.
Right, Shlomo McGowan. Yeah, perfect.
All right, it's Arts and Seizures here, broadcasting live from Murders on the Heritage Radio Network.
Well, Jimmy Bright, I'm on again, the pub where I was born. He played it from the night time to the pace of early morn. He soothed the souls of psychos and the men who had the horn. And they all looked very happy in the morning. But Jimmy didn't like his place in this world of ours. Where the other man brought storm in his neck, so he had too many pairs. So it's sad to see the grieving of the people that I'm leaving. And he took their oath, but God knows in the morning. We walked into the station in the rain. We kissed him as we put him on the train. And we sang him a song, our time's long gone. Oh, we knew that we'd be seeing him again. Sad to say, I must be on my way. So buy me beer and whiskey, cause I'm going far away. I'd like to think I'll be returning when I can. To the greatest little boozer and to Sally McLennan. The years went by, the times have changed, I grew to be a man. I learned to love the virtues of Sir Sally McLennan. I took the cheers and drank the beers and crawled back home and done. I ended up a barman in the morning. I tried the pump and took the hump and watered whiskey down. I took the booze and horses through the men and drank the brown. I heard the sight of Jimmy's making money far away.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Shane.
Yeah, we were just talking about Shane McGowan and eating pizza. I interviewed him a bunch of years ago when Peace and Love came out in the Gramercy Park Hotel back when it used to be like really cool place.
That was a great bar, the original Gramercy Bar.
Great bar, great date bar.
Absolutely.
Really fun. And then I saw him like about 10 years later, and it was really sad because he was playing this festival out on Randall's Island. And he was you could tell he was wearing adult diapers. And it was around St. Patrick's. No, it couldn't have been around St. Patrick's Day because it was summer. But his pants, you could tell. And he had to be propped up on stage. And everyone is screaming for him to drink. And it was just so... I mean, I know he had issues with heroin, too. But it was just so sad. Like, that he has to be this like, drunk fool.
Yeah, when he's obviously a very brilliant person.
Such a great writer.
And I don't use that word lightly. I mean, I really think he's such a brilliant songwriter and has a great mind. And, yeah, I've had the same thing at Pogue shows. You know, they used to play New York around St. Patrick's almost every year for years, and I would always go. And much of the crowd is really fun, and as we all know, there are few things more poignant than a late middle-aged mosh pit.
Yes. Broken hips aplenty.
Exactly. Always see. But, yeah, there is this sort of freakish, like, medieval fool kind of thing, people shouting at, you know, just sort of, I don't know, goading what's most sad and abject about him rather than what's so great about him.
Yeah, it just...
I don't get that impulse.
It really depressed me. The last time we saw him at Roseland around... Well, they were going to play around St. Patrick's Day a couple years ago.
I think I went to that, yeah.
And he ended up in a wheelchair.
Yep, I was there, yeah. Yeah, he had to skip... He fell on the stage in Boston, had to skip a show, and then they played.
Yep. And it's just, you know, it's so... I mean, so many...
So what are we saying? That there's a downside to all this alcohol?
Yes, there is.
Well, Rosie, you're a professional drinker. Do you feel the pressure to be cocktailing it up all the time? You have a public image as a drinker.
It's true, and people sometimes are disappointed because I don't get drunk. It's not, you know, I'm 43.
Drinking is your gimmick.
Drinking is part of my job, and I love it. I don't like getting drunk. I've certainly done it, but at this stage in my life, I really can't do it. And also, there's the drinker part and the writer part, and the writer part doesn't work out for me so well if I have a hangover. So I don't often feel pressure, but there's a lot of joking, like, oh my God, I can't believe you just had two drinks and that's it. I just feel like having two drinks. Sorry, you know. Again, I'm nobody's performing drink monkey.
Now, you're also a bartender.
I am a bartender.
And you're behind the bar,
and I love
that is a window to the world like none other.
It is. It's really great. I kind of think everybody should do it at least for a short time. The stories you hear, and you know, I think... We've been hearing a lot in New York lately, certainly during the last mayoral campaign, about how economically divided the city can be. And the bar, or a good neighborhood bar, still feels like a kind of leveler, where you meet a little bit of everyone from everywhere in the city. And I find that endlessly interesting.
Yeah, I'm not feeling that as much as I used to, though. Again, you know, it is the tale of two cities, and it's sadly true. It may not be... as ultra super polarized, and you know, as it's been painted by some people.
I think it depends on where you are. Sure. My neighborhood is completely polarized.
Wow, your neighborhood being Williamsburg. I mean, boy, oh boy, I was thinking about that too. In our lives in New York City, how we've seen the city turn, and I guess the East Village is really the first. You know, neighbors, we really saw turnover from artists and being a rough part of town and drugs and whatever the hell what the East Village was, an artist's place. I'm a little too young to really have seen it happen to Greenwich Village. A little bit I saw it happen to Soho, like when it kind of went from, you know, from lofts to like, you know, high-end fashion places.
Yeah.
But Williamsburg, in our lifetime, this has been an amazing sociological cycle that we have seen from a barren desert to like the epicenter.
But it wasn't a barren desert. It was it was full of,
Working people,
Polish, Italian, working class people, and industry. And instead of industry now, we have rich people buying $20 cocktails.
Wow,
you know, a hat store opened where a liquor store was for like 30 years. They moved to Park Slope because the rent was cheaper.
Yeah.
Now, every neighborhood needs a good hat store. And I don't mean to overstate the desert thing, but I do recall, like, you know, in the 80s, being recording records there and way down North 6th Street or 7th Street, I mean, there was nothing there. It was industrial. And if you wanted to get a drink at a bar or he wanted to get food. I mean,
I think what Mike's saying is there was no bar. When we say there's nothing there, what we mean
Only bar, and another great one is the Greenpoint Tavern on Bedford Avenue, which is always one of my favorite
things. And the favorites.
Turkey's Nest, I was going to say.
That's a little bit further down the road, out of the way, but Greenpoint Tavern to get. And you talk about keeping the lines clean. I remember the first time I was in there and they served the, 32-ounce Budweisers and Styrofoam cups.
Like still, at Farrell's.
Right, still to this day. And they pour a lot of Budweiser there.
Yeah,
and those lines
are
fresh. The kegs are, I mean, you know, the lines are clean. The kegs are
cold.
Fresh. That's good Budweiser. I mean, that's like, wow. Yeah. I'd like, you know, if I were to install a keg in my shower, I would like it to be maintained by the people at the Greenpoint Tavern.
I hope they're listening. Yeah, that could happen.
Do you drink in the shower, Rosie?
I do not drink in the shower. And I read something, I don't know, maybe last year about college students getting drunk in the shower, like, before going to class.
Really?
It's like, what is this? Really?
Well,
I mean, like shouldn't they be having sex in the shower?
Also, and then get drunk after class. Something.
Kids, what's going to happen to your GPA?
Well, as you know, I'm a big proponent of the beer in the shower.
You need a kegerator for that bathroom.
I've thought about it. I've actually looked into it. It's expensive. Well, Budweiser in Canada is my shower beer. It's my go-to shower beer.
Okay.
I wish I could get Peels, like Jimmy Breslin used to pitch.
Yes, I remember
beer,
that very well.
Right?
Yeah.
And he was the guy. Talk about a drinking journalist. He was our guy.
About it.
A real drinking beer, because that would be my shower beer. But you know, beer in the shower, it's not to get loaded. It's a great hangover cure. It's the only thing that is a palliative for a hangover.
I don't know about the science of that, Mike.
Mike's science is always dubious.
The science is sound.
It
works for Mike.
Listen, come on, Rosie. You know that a hangover is your body telling you that it's missing the thing that you've been feeding it.
Oh,
so all you need to do is kind of get a little equilibrium.
Uh-huh.
A hangover is there's too much blood in your alcohol. But a hot shower, cold beer. But I also just want to say that I love the beer and shower, like before I go out on a date or before dinner when I'm taking.
Or before you do radio.
Yeah, wake up on a Sunday. Well, you know, you're starting the day. It's just nice. It's all. It's only a beer, for Christ's sakes.
All right. I mean, no harsh judgment is being issued here.
You know, it's like
my
mini
shower
spa
drinker.
Until I can afford better. That's like my spa.
I got it. I can see that.
Ladies who lunch go have like little cucumber water in the sauna.
Unless it's Elaine Stritch.
Oh.
Then she'd definitely be having a drink in the shower. When I think of ladies who lunch, I think first of Elaine Stritch, which I think is good.
We were at my friend Dan and I were at IKEA 2 weeks ago, and he goes, "Oh my God, Elaine Stritch is in the cafeteria." I was like,
"Oh my God,
Elaine Stritch is not in the cafeteria at IKEA."
That would be incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't think
mistaken.
It was Elaine Stritch. I can't imagine. Though that's a movie I would watch. Elaine Stritch at IKEA.
With those Swedish meatballs.
With the Swedish meatballs. I was trying to find the right joke for the Swedish meatballs, but it didn't seem appropriate.
No.
I don't think the public drinking drunkenness in terms of, like, you know, the Rat Pack vibe and, you know, the old Dean Martin kind of, like, Frank Sinatra swigging and swirling and being publicly drunk, it's kind of gone way out of vogue. I think people if you ever remember those, like, Dean Martin roasts and Foster Brooks and his whole shtick was being shit-faced, I don't think that goes over anymore.
Not really. And I mean, I think, you know, of the great illustrious public figures who drank with gusto, we lost the greatest in the last year, Peter O'Toole, whose name must be invoked on St. Patrick's Day, and I raise my glass. But yeah, I'm not impressed with the antics of rock stars. I'm not going to name names right now. Hi, ladies. There are these nice girls who are here checking us out. They're adorable. Cute.
No.
But Peter O'Toole, I mean, that was sort of elevated bad behavior. You know, you think of
I think of Oliver Reed.
Oh.
The Peter O'Toole League.
Oh, yeah. But the thing was, I mean, O'Toole did it with such grace and he was and with kindness, where Oliver Reed could just be mean and scary. O'Toole was always elegant and friendly and fun.
But now we have Gwyneth Paltrow claiming none of her friends get drunk. Getting drunk is unattractive.
Well, I'll tell you
that's one reason I wrote Drinking with Men, because of these ideas, especially about women, that it's unseemly
to drink. Especially alone in a bar.
Well, I'm laughing, especially amongst our contemporaries. Once upon a time, if you got caught drag racing your Lamborghini while you were stoned and then were belligerent to the fuzz, you'd be some kind of folk hero. You know? But unfortunately, the guy who's doing it isn't like our guy.
Not our guy.
He's not our guy. But that kind of like willful public misbehavior has gone so out of style.
Yeah, well, you know, so you say it's gone out of style. I just feel like it doesn't have style anymore.
No, when you have Justin Bieber doing it.
Yeah, I was trying not to name the name, but let's go right ahead.
I thought I did a pretty good job not mentioning it.
Yeah, you did a great job.
I mean, I drove all the way around the block not to mention his name.
You did.
Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber. The guy with the hair. Yeah. Well, I feel like, you know, we've talked quite a bit about beer, but we should put in a good word for whiskey.
Tell me how you get a taste for it. I've never had a taste for it.
Spend
a weekend with Rosie and I, and come out the other side of Belieber.
And, so I'm having coffee now with a nice little slug of Kilbeggan, an Irish whiskey you may not know as well as, you know, Jameson or Powers or Bushmills, and it's delicious. And I do feel that there are some pairings in this world that are just such classics. I'm looking at this pizza, and of course, mozzarella and tomato is one of them, but a pint of stout and Irish whiskey.
It's fantastic.
It's just magic.
A Boilermaker, but even, you know, a bottle of Budweiser and a shot of bourbon, you know, a beer
great.
And a shot is...
Yeah, I'm pro any Boilermaker, but for this occasion... You want a pint.
And I'm a whiskey drinker.
But never a car bomb, especially not on St. Patrick's Day.
No, that's bad form.
Is that a car bomb? Is that something that involves dropping? It's messy. Those are for children.
And the name, you know, I mean, I have a thick skin, and most people I know who spend a lot of time in bars do, but some people really are upset by that name. Some people, terrorism jokes just aren't hilarious. Go figure.
Uptight.
But there's
no,
so
I do
much...
think it's in bad.
I've been a whiskey drinker since I was a teenager.
Starting with Jim Beam,
which is still among my favorites. I mean, there's so many good bourbons.
Absolutely.
And all these like handcrafted bourbons.
Yeah.
And I love Woodford's amazing, and Breckenridge is coming out of Colorado is really, I mean, it's
there's
just really
no
nice
end
stuff.
Of great whiskey.
But I do really like Jim Beam. I'll drink 10 High. I mean, it's, you know, there's a difference. I can tell the difference.
Right.
But the difference to me is $5.
Right.
Per shot.
So,
but seriously,
Rosie, what is the perfect St. Patrick's Day drink?
Oh, I would say a pint of stout. I mean, it's usually going to be Guinness, but sometimes you can find another stout. To me, the sort of classic is Guinness and Jameson. I feel like Irish whiskey, some people disparage it a little for its relative... demureness in a way. It's filtered three times, which it does make it quite smooth, and some people find that makes it a little uninteresting. I totally disagree.
Irish whiskey is very flavorful.
It's so drinkable and so pleasurable. I mean, there are higher shelf Irish whiskeys I love too. I'm a big fan of Redbreast, which I think is a fantastic
Jameson and Bushmills are both such good products. They're both very delicious. I'm not such a Powell's fan, but...
Oh, I like Powers also, and they have a special release called John's Lane, which is one of my recent favorites. But yeah, a pint and a neat whiskey.
Yeah.
And you sip the whiskey or you do it?
Sip it.
Sip
you know,
it.
Shooting, I like to taste my liquor.
Right.
The shooting thing, not for me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and then there's the
except to celebrate.
Except,
you know?
Except... A shot is a nice concept, too, which sort of is also not, you don't see quite as much. I don't think you do, right? I mean, you order a whiskey neat, that's fine. I mean, bartenders in the old bars used to pour you a shot back, you know, with a wink and a nod in a real shot glass that you could shoot because it wasn't gigantic.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a real shot. Yeah. It was an ounce and a half of liquor and very manageable, which is really, you know, one of my pet peeves about cocktails. Is that they're all gigantic these days.
Oh.
I mean...
That's changing, unfortunately.
You know,
a
martini is supposed to be something you can drink quickly and stay cold. It's not supposed to be 6 ounces of vodka.
No, I agree. A martini should really be no more than 3 ounces.
A silver bullet. And you should be able to have two and walk out of there.
Sure.
You know, also, I mean, I go to some of these, you know, restaurants, and like, I know it's a good pour and it's kind of manly just to have a bourbon on the rocks. I don't really need a bowl of bourbon.
Really?
Well, you know, I need the option. I need the option.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's so much liquor that
I mean,
by the time
you can stop.
Yeah,
nobody's
you can
forcing
leave it behind.
You to drink the whole thing.
Yeah, as if. It should come with two straws when you see these, like, you know.
It's a tiki bourbon in a skull.
How I miss those days, right, of Trader Vic's in the Plaza Hotel. You get, like, a drink for $7 that came in a bedpan, basically.
Yeah, amazing.
So what are we doing for Thanksgiving?
Wow.
I'm cutting you off, Judy.
I know.
That's it.
No more coffee or water for me. For St. Patrick's Day, I'm going to watch The Real Housewives of New York with our friend Val, who's going to be on this episode.
Oh, well, maybe I'll turn that on to see our friend and often frequent guest, Val Frankel. But I was just going to go home and hide.
Yeah, that's my plan.
I mean, this is like St. Patrick's Day is like the day to stay off the fucking street. You know, it's not quite New Year's Eve, which is my least favorite night of the year. But yeah, I try to stay off the street on St. Patrick's Day.
If I have a good productive day, I might be persuaded to go out just for a pint. Whenever I say, I'm going to go out and have a pint.
Well, Rosa, you're a journalist. You need to go out and you know, and you're highly trained in the art of observation. And
I want to see your tax return. I want, like,
responsibility.
Your expenses must be hilarious.
They're kind of funny, and I'm very cautious, you know, and I say to my accountant, "Really? Really? This really is my work?" And she's like, "Yes, it is your work."
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice work if you can get it.
That's what they say.
And it's been the fastest half hour on the internet today once again.
Where can we find you, Rosie? We can find your book on Amazon.
You can find my book all over the place. You can find me at South in the South Slope section of Brooklyn on Tuesdays from 2 to 9, so come on down.
Tuesday afternoon drinking. That's good.
Really fun. Day drinkers are the best people.
I have to do that before I leave.
Yes.
Playing hooky is the best, right?
It really is.
All right. Well, we'll see you next week. I don't even know who our guest
is next week. Next week is Pizza Week. We've got
Next week is Pizza Week.
We've got Chicago versus New York pizza happening
here. I know who deserves to win that.
It's not really a competition, but the guys we got from Chicago are not your standard Chicago pizza guys. It's like a stoner laboratory of pizza revolutionary imagination. It's going to be good. We're going to have some fun. So,
that sounds good.
Once again, for Judy McGuire and Rosie Schaap and Evan in the booth, it's Mike Edison on Arts and Seizures. See you next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.